Welcome to Tuesday Topics. Last week, we were discussing the whole issue of nonverbal communications and some of the ways that blind and visually impaired people miss out on signals that they might be being given by someone else. And afterwards, someone had the bright idea that what we ought to discuss then, this week, is dating among people who are blind. Is it harder for a blind person to get a date? There are a bunch of questions that we can explore. Do we have evidence that it's harder for blind people to date?
Well, this is Matthew Dyer from Canton, Ohio. I don't find it too hard to find a date, although, I mean, as far as like going out with somebody or anything, I don't usually go for looks or anything like that, but a lot of times I just kind of follow, you know, my instincts as to what I think might the signal or whatever it might be. I don't know, I just kind of do what I can, but to kind of get by, it would be kind of interesting to know what, how to be able to tell, which is why I'm kind of glad I'm here, because I didn't have a chance to learn from everybody else, so.
This is Alice Richard from Brunswick, Georgia. As a teenager, and even in my early young adulthood, it was an issue, not so much of getting dates. I mean, that wasn't the hard part, but being able to actually go on the date because of the whole transportation issue. And in fact, I remember I went to a school for the blind, so we were allowed on the weekends to go out and stay out off campus till 11 if you were actually quote unquote on a date. And I remember the one time I went out with a guy and we walked to the closest village and had dinner. Well, then it poured down rain, so we called back to the school, and one of the supervisors came and picked us up, and I said, you know, the only sad thing about dating is we never get the experience parking. And so what she did was took us to a park, and she got out of the car for a little bit to leave us alone and said, but if you ever tell anybody, I'll deny it. But, you know, those were the kinds of, if it hadn't been, you know, for that one experience, I think that's a lot of, you know, sometimes the issues that you miss out on, because transportation is an issue when you're trying to date.
This is Rachel in Orlando, and I don't know of any specific statistical evidence. What was difficult for me, not just dating when I was a teenager, but just in making any kind of plans, it's so easy for teenagers to be able to just jump in their car and go make real quick, you know, just spur of the moment plans. And I was never able to do that. And the frustrating part was when I had to make all these plans, make the arrangements, and then for whatever reason, something didn't work.
This is Debbie Greb from Bradenton, Florida. When I was a teenager, I was hampered from dating by my parent. There was a deal on Sundays at the school for the blind that you could leave the campus if you were on a date. Of course, people went in a group. There weren't these couples strolling off by themselves, but you could go with your date in the group and go to a movie, and there was a little greasy spoon diner close to the movie theater, and you could go there and get something to eat and then walk back to the school. And girls my age were going, and you had to have parental permission. I don't think the boys did, but the girls did. And my parent did not want me leaving the campus and going out on a date. And I told my mother some time ago that I felt that they had done me a disservice as a teenager, because not once during my high school days did I actually get to go out on a date. And I think I really missed something. And when I mentioned it to my mother, we were just talking about our childhoods and kind of reminiscing. And she said, well, your father was just so afraid something was going to happen to you. And I do think that I missed out on a lot by not having that dating experience when I was in high school.
Del Newland in Pittsburgh. And boy, I have to think way back. But in high school, it wasn't, I don't think I had any more of a problem. Of course, I went to the School for Blind in Pittsburgh. I did have problems dating sighted people, though. I dated a couple, but unfortunately, I felt somewhat inferior, basically because I couldn't drive. Of course, I did eventually marry a blind girl, blind woman, who's here, by the way. Her name is Bonnie. But the thing that I just felt, like I said, I couldn't drive. But as far as the whole experience of dating, we were rather fortunate. We were given some freedoms where we could go out on weekends.
I would be really interested in hearing from any folks who were mainstreamed, if there are any of those folks on here, to ask whether their dating experiences were a little different.
This is Anthony. I would say, well, my field, I'm only 29, but I've dated both totally blind and sighted. So with me, it's just a matter really with the sighted person, because a lot of the times they tend to be afraid of either if they would offend us in any type of way. In high school, no, there was really not that many girls. I mean, there were a lot of girls I was interested in and wanting to date. But no, there's always the fact of the teacher being in the way and the teacher basically telling you to back off because this girl feels this way. And I hated that because my teacher was kind of, you know, getting in my business and wanting to talk to a girl, whatever. So it's just like, meh. With me, my parents were okay with it. Me, I'm always the adventurous type of person, so I do like to do interesting things. In fact, my recent one was with a girl that was sighted, and she drove and everything. It didn't bother her. Some people, it will bother them because some people look at us as different.
One of the statistics that's out there is that 90% of the blind students who were mainstreamed had not had a date by the end of high school.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sherry from Florida. I was born and raised in a small town where I was the one and only blind person in the entire county, and I did go to mainstream school. Not only did I find it hard to date, it was very difficult to meet people because if they're unaware of your capabilities or unsure of how to approach you or talk to you, they don't usually. And I guess it probably scared everybody when I lost my sight because I was born visually impaired and then it got worse at one point. But I never dated in high school. My first date was another blind person, and to be perfectly honest, I've never dated a sighted person. And it's all been long-distance relationships, which are very difficult to try to work out.
This is Julian from Montreal. I didn't expect tonight that this topic. I thought that we'd be talking about politics, so I had to really think about myself and remember how it was once upon a time. Well, first of all, I'm not mainstream until I finish high school. I was in blind schools, but then I went 6 years at university, and then, of course, I guess you could call that mainstream. And there was some dances where girls could ask boys, so I figured, well, seeing as girls could ask boys here, maybe if I don't get asked, of course, I'll know. But one day, after a few of these dances, one girl asked me. Then after the dance, I said, well, why did you ask me? Do you have anything to tell me? Why? She said, well, I tell you, I feel that I'm not very pretty. And I figured, well, he won't see me, so I won't feel bad with him. Then I asked the boys around afterwards, the next days, how is she like exactly? So they said, well, she's all right, she's very pretty. We went again to dances, and I kept telling her, you know, if you go out with me just because you don't feel you're pretty, well, you are. So, you know, go ahead and see other boys if you feel like it. And eventually, of course, it ended, and I finally married the sighted person.
Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I went to the School for Blind all the way from kindergarten through high school, and my dating experiences mostly were at the junior and senior prom level, and we asked to go to high school dances, and those were fun to do. And I mean, someone might feel that I'm not sure what a blind person is capable of doing.
I can also say that I've spoken with some older friends of mine that work at rehabilitation centers for the blind. One of my friends is totally blind, and he said that he was actually in a relationship with a sighted woman, and, you know, it got serious, and they were married for a while. And I guess she got fed up with having, you know, a husband who couldn't provide his own transportation, you know, everywhere he wanted to go. She also took advantage of him because he was blind. She stole money from him, mistreated him, and it ended up in a divorce. I honestly think that it's difficult for blind people to date sighted people.
Sherry, I'm going to leave your last point for a little while because I wanted to focus for a little while on some points that were made earlier. And I want to start by focusing on a point that that Debbie Grubb made, because she suggested that her parents had inhibited her ability to develop effectively as a teenager by discouraging her from dating. There's a lot of literature out there that says that parents of blind girls tend to be overprotective and tend not to allow their daughters to date as openly or as comfortably, and that blind guys don't have the same problem.
This is Alice Richard, and I didn't have that problem with my parents, but I guess that's probably because they were both blind and visually impaired themselves, so in the sense that they didn't mind that I dated, but they were sure picky about who I dated in the sense that they really thought I'd be better off with a sighted person than with a blind person, and so they were always trying to steer me in that direction.
It was really interesting. They did tell me I couldn't date because they were afraid that boys were bad, but they implied that they were afraid that something might happen, that I might get hit by a car, that there are bad people in the world and you're out there walking around at night, and it was just a group of kids going to a movie and to a diner for something to eat. And I remember what it made me do be is more curious about dating and more curious about doing things. And the summer that I graduated, before I started off to college, I was sent to the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind for a college prep program. And I had a wonderful time out there doing all the stuff that my parents wouldn't let me do. And but I found it very interesting that they just were afraid to let go. I don't think they wanted to lose control of me. It was a very interesting thing, and I do think it negatively impacted my teenage years. I'm pretty independent-spirited and adventurous and outgoing, so perhaps because I'm not shy and retiring, the effects weren't as long-lasting as they might have been with somebody who is a little more timid and laid back.
This is Rachel, and my parents were pretty good about it, actually, and I didn't give them a whole lot of opportunities to worry about it, but, you know, it was understood. They wanted to know the person that I was going out with. They wanted to know what, you know, where we were going to go and when I was going to be back, and I darn sure better be back by midnight, you know, the house rules, you know, I'm living under their roof. So they were actually pretty good about it, but, you know, they did have rules that I needed to follow, and they did want to know the person. And my brothers probably gave me more of a hard time. You know, we've got to make sure he's good enough for you, and, you know, jokingly, of course, but, you know, certainly it was the whole family kind of was concerned, but they, as difficult as it was, probably stayed up some nights and worried about me, but they did let me go and be a kid and date.
We've sort of explored at least the beginnings of the question, and Sherry certainly stated one opinion, and that is that it is really hard and really difficult to date people who are sighted and to get into long-term relationships with them because there are some real dependency issues. But I suspect that that isn't an opinion that is necessarily shared by everybody here. Who feels that actually dating and getting into long-term relationships with people who are sighted is actually a pretty good thing?
This is Rachel, and considering the fact that I've been married to a sighted person for the last 8.5 years, I guess I gotta say that it's pretty good, relations with blind and sighted. At least it's worked well for me. Initially, at least, when I've dated, and I've dated both blind and sighted, I think it was, yeah, there's certain issues that you have to deal with, and advantages and disadvantages on either side, but I think for me, it just, I wasn't looking specifically for somebody or specifically for somebody blind. It just worked out that way, and I that was certainly something to contend with once I was found myself in a relationship, to kind of determine whether the relationship was going to work, you know, logistically, whether the person felt that they could deal with somebody who was blind or wanted to deal with somebody who was blind. But it certainly wasn't the major issue for either one of us. And I was in relationships with sighted people that didn't work, and relationships with blind people didn't work. So it's definitely something to deal with, but it wasn't a major issue for me.
I've known people that have had both kinds of experiences. A teacher at the School of the Blind, he was totally blind, but he was married to a sighted wife, and they were quite successful at that. A friend of mine that I graduated a year before, he was been married for a number of years and to a sighted woman, and they've been successful. But I've known a couple of friends with the other kind of experiences. They were married to sighted people and then got divorced and then married to one partially sighted was married to a totally blind woman, and another partially sighted man was married to another totally, to a partially sighted woman, I believe. She felt that relationships between blind and sighted aren't too successful. But I don't know in the overall scheme of things. I think one of the problems maybe with blind people, like if after they get out of school, I suppose transportation is an issue and dependency might be an issue with people who are dating or want to be married or have relationships, but maybe a block to relationships is, I suppose, unemployment or not being able to, well, the kind of security that comes from with employment. You go out with somebody and have a relationship with them and possibly get married and have kids, you need to have good financial stability and all other things that go with that.
I have been in two interesting situations lately with friends of mine who are blind men married to sighted women. And just the other day, Friel and I had returned a dinner. They had invited us out to dinner, and so it was our turn to reciprocate, and we did that. And we had gone to a little Mexican restaurant because we all love Mexican food and thought that it would be fun to try this restaurant that we had tried before. And we decided, Friel and I, that I'd go ahead and take care of the credit card because he had to take Bonnie outside or something. I don't remember now why. But in any event, when I got out the credit card and started to give everything over to the server, the sighted husband, began reciting to the server how she needed to deal with me in terms of the check and taking care of the check and signing the credit card slip. And the wife said, let Debbie tell her how she wants to deal with the situation. And I thought that was very interesting. And a couple of years ago, went out with another couple that we know, and it came time to read the menu. And the wife kind of gave this sigh, and there was this awkward silence. And I said, you're getting sick of this blindness biz a little bit, aren't you? And she said, no, not really. I'll read the menu. And so it really made me begin to think that somehow, no matter how independent you are as a blind person, it is easy to get into that dependency on the sighted person, and the relationship becomes then a relationship of not between two equals. And from what I've seen with Rachel and Jay thus far in their 8.5 year marriage, I've not seen any evidence of that, but I sure have seen it in other people. And somehow the person that drives the almighty car pretty much calls the shots. And I think as a person who is very independent and very spirited and all of that, that I'd resent the heck out of that.
It's a good point, Deb. I've actually been involved in both kinds of relationships, and I know that my response to that whole issue, and I saw it as an issue right from the beginning when I was involved in a relationship with someone who was sighted, was to actually bend over backwards to do more than my share of the things that I could do, simply to make up for the fact that transportation wasn't an issue. And that is not to say that one didn't develop dependency, because I think one did. And I know that when our marriage ended and I made a decision to move out on my own, it was a very difficult decision for me to make. It was not at all an easy decision. Julien in Montreal, you're married to a person who is able to see. Do you have comments for us?
Yes, Paul. You see, my wife was one of my neighbor's niece at one time, and I was still at college, and my neighbor, this aunt of hers, told me, she said she has a boyfriend, and but she's a very nice girl. So whenever I met her at my neighbor's place, I didn't expect anything to come out of that, and then one day she told me that, well, I broke out, with my boyfriend, and she said, he started talking to me. So I said, one thing that I can do is go for a walk. I mean, would you like to come with me? And she did, and then I didn't think more of that in the sense that I didn't have a cent to my name, and I was still in college, and I didn't expect to marry for a long, long time. But the next summer that I came back to my place, she came to see me again. I said, I guess you must have got a boyfriend this winter. She said, no, I didn't. So finally, and then we finally married a year before I finished college or university. And then she kept telling people that I was the biggest fish that she could get, you know. Like to say, you know, I didn't marry him because I took pity on him. I married him because, you know, I felt that I'd be well with him. Now, it's been a long time, over 20 years now, and she's still in it, and she claims that she still loves me quite a bit. So that's about the story.
Julian, do you ever feel like you were too dependent on her as a blind person, and she being sighted, or do you feel like you've worked out a way that both of you are comfortable within the relationship?
Oh yeah, sometimes I feel that. My uncle told me the other day, he said, what would you do if she died? Well, I said, look, what would you do if your wife died? He said, well, I don't know. Well, I said, yeah, I'm not worse than, you know, it's the same. But, you know, I'm a little too dependent. I go out on my own with the white cane, and my employer always refused that I'd have a guide dog by saying that people are afraid of dogs and this and that. So, but no, yes, I do. Sometimes, not all the time, hopefully, but sometimes I do. And, you know, for instance, tonight I came back from work and I had a special letter that I got from a former client, and it was written personal on the envelope. So I said, would you read it to me? Of course, I could have put that letter on the scanner, but I felt that it was faster that way. So I feel sometimes that I'm too dependent.
Say, Paul, I had just thought of something about the dependency. I'm wondering, like, even among sighted people, isn't it true that, like, two people that are married to each other, hasn't it always been in some ways that both sides are dependent on the other, like the man and the wife are they dependent on the other if you really look at it?
This is Alice, and I do believe that you can have a successful sighted and blind match, but it just seems that that's probably, I would think, more of a rarity just in the people that I've even known, and even myself. I was involved with the relationship at one time with the sighted guy, and basically when we first started, you know, I let him do everything for me and, you know, kind of gave into that dependency thing. And then when I decided I'd had enough and I wanted to strut my independence, he didn't like that, you know, and it was like that's what he was looking for. And it seems like, especially I noticed a lot of my friends who are male who are blind and have sighted wives, it seems like in the relationships that's kind of, you know, it's like they like mother. Them, they want to mother them, and that's what they want to do. And the minute, you know, the guy actually does step out and try to do some independence and says, look, I don't need you, you know, I don't need you to be my mother, I want you my partner, then things go bad. And the other aspect of it, I have one friend in particular, he was diabetic and totally blind, and his wife was sighted, and which brings up another whole issue. They couldn't have children because of his diabetes. He just wasn't able to give her children. So when they wanted to go and adopt, they were told they couldn't adopt anything but a child who had special needs, even because of the fact that she was married to a blind guy, and hence that basically ended their marriage. So because she didn't feel that she should have to adopt a special needs child just because her husband was blind.
Well, I think I've heard that most blind and sighted pairings aren't as successful as those that are both blind or partially sighted.
I think one of the things that has, and thank you for the compliment, Debbie, by the way, we work hard at that. But I think one of the things that has kept it working well for us as far as the dependency issue, yeah, I'll admit there are some things that, you know, it's just quicker to have my husband do because he can see it. He doesn't have to put something on the scanner, you know, whatever. But there have also been times, and then there are things that I'll do that maybe he might normally do, but since he's providing the transportation or he's doing the bills or whatever, I'll try to pick up the slack somewhere else. So it works for us. But there have been times where he's actually said, you know, if we'll have a conversation about something, and if I ask him to do something, he has actually said to me, well, hey, why don't you do it? You know, so I think we're both very conscious of the roles we want each other to play in the marriage, that it doesn't become more of a, you know, 75-25 split. And certainly there are going to be times when that happens. regardless of whether it's on my side or his side. But, you know, we try to, as much as possible, make it a 50-50 split in general of what our roles are.
I've talked with a lot of sighted folks who are involved with blind people who are in the organized blindness movement, and many of those sighted people express a real frustration that they feel as though they are treated by blindness organizations sort of like second-class citizens. They're really important when somebody has something that wants to be read, but in terms of accepting them fully into, say, an organization like ACB or FCB or NFB, blind people tend to kind of close the door and say, you don't have the qualifications to be a full-fledged member. And there are actually a number of people who've talked about forming an organization of sighted spouses of blind people to try to work out some ways of dealing with the resentment that many of them have about the degree to which they perceive themselves as being taken advantage of. I wonder what people think of that.
Bill Newland here from Pittsburgh. I've seen that happen too. We've tried to open up our Golden Triangle Council of the Blind to some degree. Because of that, in the past we've had situations where sighted spouses, you know, if you had, for example, if you had some sort of fundraising thing such as a spaghetti dinner or whatever, they were the ones that did all the work and yet they couldn't be accepted. I think one of the reasons that a lot of organizations, well, obviously, don't let sighted people assume full membership in the group, obviously, is a lot of the groups are afraid that, you know, if this happens, you know, first it's one sighted person, and before you know it, they're actually running the show, so to speak.
Well, yeah, I can see where in an organization of blind people that the sighted spouse might feel that maybe because he or she's helping out, that they might feel that they might be put upon or second-class citizen because they're being used to do the extra work, you know, the, like reading menus, I suppose, if you're in a restaurant or doing the driving for people and things of that nature, just any number of things, I guess.
I've always heard, Bill, the kind of thing you're talking about. And I guess I'm finding myself wondering, perhaps there was a time 30, 40, 50 years ago where blind folks were relatively cowed by individuals with sight. But I wonder if we would be now. And yet we have rules that in our organizations, you know, 50% or more than 50% of the members of any given chapter have to be blind or visually impaired. None of the high offices in local chapters and state affiliates in the national organization can be held by anybody except somebody who is blind, legally blind. And the question that I guess I have is are those rules even necessary anymore, or have we actually reached the stage where we're probably pretty capable of protecting ourselves against being overtaken and dominated by people who are sighted?
I think the rules are still necessary. I agree with you, Paul. We've come a long way in the last 40 or 50 years. But let's be realistic. For the most part, our place in the world is second-class citizens in many respects. Blind people don't hold jobs in the private sector to the same extent that they hold it in the public sector in terms of government jobs or jobs in blindness fields. And in our organizations, it's the one area that we can really govern ourselves and seal our own fate and deal with our own issues. And I think, too, that no matter how much a sighted person loves his or her blind partner, that there is that lack of understanding that you cannot understand what it is to be blind unless you have been blind. So I think the rules are good, but I think that using blind sighted people merely for their sight is wrong. When I was president in Maryland of our state affiliate, and when I was president of Guide Dog Users Incorporated, I always made it a point to see that sighted people did other things, and I made it a point to thank them graciously for what they contributed to the organization. I think that they can be a part of the organization, be a part of the group, but I still don't see ourselves giving over those high offices and policy-making decisions to sighted people yet. I think the time time may come someday, but I certainly don't think it has arrived yet. And while I have the floor, I'll just state one thing about the resentment that some sighted people feel that Paul mentioned in organization. I wonder if they feel resentment at being used in their relationship, but it's because of the sight issue. But it's safer to talk in terms of the ACB or the state affiliate of the ACB or the affiliate of the state affiliate.
I think a lot of what I heard, publicly, obviously, it was never pointed out. But when you would, we'd get together with a couple of the couples, and the sighted person would make the observation that, well, you know, I did this, and so and so said this, and I am really not appreciated for what I've done. But I do think eventually it will change. And the other thing, I think you can see it happening bit by bit in, you know, ACD, PCD, which, you know, I'm a member of, and our group gradually, you know, there was a time when a sighted person couldn't hold office. Now, of course, at least with our group, you can hold any office but president or vice president. But I think it will gradually change.
Yep, it's interesting. The most widespread constitutional thing is fascinating, because what it essentially says is that blind people get to do all the high offices, and the secretary and the treasurer can A, be sighted, and B, there's no term limit. So it's fascinating. It's as if you harness that sighted person to the plow and never let him let go, or her. I certainly didn't mean to imply that they were all males, because, of course, they aren't. So it is an interesting issue. We've talked some about some of the problems that are inherent in relationships that operate for people who are blind and people who are sighted who get together. Let's spend a little bit of time talking about some of the advantages and disadvantages of being involved in a relationship with another blind person. Who'd like to kick that one off?
Oh, Alice will jump in here. Well, to me, some of the advantages are, and I think somebody alluded to it earlier, is that at least you kind of know where each other are coming from as far as what the issues are. Of course, the disadvantages, and what Michael likes to point out to me all the time, is it does become an issue again of when you do need to have things done. Like if there's something that he needs read, I obviously can't read it. Or if there's someplace he needs to go, I obviously can't take him there. So, you know, the transportation becomes an issue. It's just the same as if it were blind and sighted. I mean, there are definitely advantages and disadvantages. And I don't know, for me, and I think my blindness played a lot in it, I just have always been more comfortable in a relationship with a blind person. And again, I think that goes back to because I feel like they already know kind of where I'm coming from.
Hi, this is Debbie Grubb again from Bradenton, Florida. In the few relationships that I was in with sighted people, I felt that they wanted to rule me, that they wanted a woman that they could dominate, that they could take care of. And I resented that. I could see early on in each of the relationships that I entered that the person did not want a partner, did not want an equal. They wanted somebody that they thought was cute and smart and funny, but also in a way that they could feel superior to. And I resented that, and so I found in the relationship that I have with my husband that although transportation sometimes is a royal pain, and what he says is that it is the hardest thing about blindness is that some of the stupidest things, you're so smart, you should be able to do them, but just because you're blind, you can't do them. It's so annoying. So there are advantages and disadvantages, but I think that the comfort level, the fact that I am in a relationship where I feel equal with my husband and he feels equal with me. We take our guide dogs and go everywhere. It's freeing. I find that it is much less freeing for me. I feel that I have room to breathe and room to be the person that I was meant to be. So for me, the disadvantages of the blind-blind relationship are not as difficult for me to deal with as the disadvantages that I found, that probably not everybody finds, but that I found in relationships with sighted people. So I enjoy having a relationship with someone who understands where I'm coming from, who isn't afraid to walk out in the rain with me with the guide dogs when there's somewhere that we need to go, who will just do, you know, just do anything, and who is so smart that things that I haven't been able to figure out, he can figure out and teach me in a way that I can understand. So I really have found an equal partnership that I respond to and that I rely on, and a dependence that's freeing rather than cloying, because he depends on me for things because he's kind of shy and quiet and soft-spoken and I'm not, and he's kind of smart and computer literate and can figure out anything and can fix anything and I can't. So it kind of buys, you know, it kind of balances out. And so I made my choice and chose, I guess, the disadvantages that I felt most comfortable dealing with.
Bill Newland, I've seen situations where the sighted person will make so much fuss over how a blind person looks, even while they're, you know, just relaxing in their own home. But I agree with the other things that were said. Definitely, both my wife and I, you know, belong to the same group, and, you know, we can argue about issues, and we have that in common. And of course, we depend on public transportation, and right now, at least, it's pretty good, but as of March 1st in Pennsylvania, who knows what's going to happen to transportation, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
I am with a person who is extremely fashion conscious, and she is far more concerned about how I look than my first wife, who was sighted, ever was. There was a fascinating study that was done in the 1970s, and I don't know if anybody saw the study. And I guess, without going into lots of detail, what it suggested is that many blind women are really uncomfortable about being able to get involved in relationships. And one of the statements that was made in the survey, anyway, was that because of inhibitions or a lack of dating during teenage years, and because of low self-esteem issues that operated for blind women, there tended to be two extremes that operated in the population. One of those extremes was women simply wouldn't date. Those folks tended to be to become very strong Christians, and they tended to become extremely religious, and they sort of substituted religion for relationships. And the other extreme, which was sort of fascinating, was that it was alleged that many blind women became extremely promiscuous because they felt that the only way they could maintain a relationship was to give their bodies away. So I don't know what people feel. Now, this survey was done by a sighted psychologist, and so you can discount it a little if you like. But I'd be interested in some response.
This is Bill Newland, and now I, you know, I've seen this. Some of the women that we know. In fact, one of the persons I talked to said that she was afraid that the reason she didn't date, and the reason that, well, she was married for a brief period, but the reason that she wouldn't, that she didn't want anybody to have control over her. The one other person that I talked to indicated that part of the problem is she just felt uncomfortable with somebody else.
This is Rachel, and I would say there's probably some truth to that, actually. I've known women on both sides of that issue, so there probably is a little bit of truth to that.
It's a fascinating subject, the whole issue of intimacy and how it works and how it functions. And I think that we're really to the point in our program where we ought to do what we try to do each week. And that is to ask, should entities who are involved in working with people who are blind get involved in the issue of relationships? Should it happen in the school system? Should it happen in the rehab system? Should it happen in the consumer blindness system? And if those entities should get involved, which should, and what kind of involvement ought there to be?
Now, this is Matt again. My answer is I don't think school really should have any say. Rather, I don't think the school should be involved in this at all. I mean, if they want to, if they do get involved, I think they should at least give some tips on, and on how to handle a situation, but schools and rehabilitation centers, I think, should really just let the people deal with it the best they can, and if they do have a problem, then they can maybe try to step in and try to help, maybe, but I don't think that they should be completely controlling everything and trying to say that, you know, this is how we think this should be done, or this is how we think that should be done. Or
one thing I never liked about some of the places when they would say, oh, you know, you cannot show any public affection. Public affection, it depends on how it's done, okay? There are ways of doing that. Do I think rehab centers should stop people from dating? Again, like I said before, if it's done adultly, they should not step in. They should have no saying in it, because, number one, it's like, you know, freedom of speech, you know? But if it's teenagers, and it depends on the age limit, yeah, okay, then I'd say they should step in and maybe have a little saying.
Pretty much the way I see it is you can't get directly involved in relationships. I mean, each one's going to be different. They're going to happen one way or another. You know, nothing's laid out in a manual or whatever you want to call it. But I think the sort of support groups would be a way to go if there's going to be any involvement at all. That's pretty much the way I see it. Just kind of coach them along on, you know, the communication issues would probably be the major thing. And beyond that, I don't see any way any of these entities could get involved.
I agree with Larry that the extent that the groups can get involved would be in a group setting, maybe a workshop, say, to discuss some of the communications issues, because they do need to be discussed. People need to know that these issues exist, that they're not just dealing with them personally. However, the relationship itself, each relationship is such a personal thing. And, you know, what works for me might not work for you, and everybody is different, and the dynamics of the relationship are different. So only in the very general sense, but I do think the communications issues certainly could be addressed, and groups can deal with it in a support way.
This is Allison. Yeah, I would say, boy, that's a hard one, especially in school settings. The idea is to be so protective and tell you not, but I think definitely the communication part, and I think for somebody, especially as a younger person, just the general concept and ideas of datings, I think is good. I think in the adult situation, when you have those concerns, I see that more as a peer support group type of thing, where others come together and share, rather than the entities themselves and the people who run the agencies being the one to lead such a discussion. I would see that more as a peer support group.
Years ago, the CNI had graduate forums where throughout the country where people would come and discuss things that they felt should be changed or enhanced, or what was really great about their guide dog training and advocacy issues and access issues. And what they found was that husbands and wives of guide dog users had some resentment toward the dog and or didn't know how to work confidently with the team so that they could be a family, but the team could still work. And so they began to have workshops for sighted spouses of guide dog users. And as I said, I don't know if they still do that, but that's an example of how an entity can really get involved. I think, like Alice said, though, and others have said, the best way is through peer support groups. And I see peer support groups such as ACB and its state and local chapters doing it by way of role models. I think the best way, whether you're working with blind children, whether you're working with teenagers, whether you're working with newly blind adults, is role models and mentoring. And I think that we really need to do that and show the way by our example, whether we're a couple that's blind and living harmoniously together, or whether we're a blind-sighted couple who are living harmoniously together, that our life and the way we conduct ourselves in public speaks volumes to people who are just beginning to investigate relationships, or who are just getting involved in a new relationship, or who are evaluating whether or not they want to continue in a relationship.
One of the issues, and I guess it's certainly one of the reasons that I raised the whole issue of whether organizations should be involved, relates to blind men. There are arguments out there from blind women, that blind men, perhaps even as a group, are pretty gauche, and they have expectations about how blind women ought to receive them and how they ought to be treated by blind women, which are obnoxious. There are many blind women who talk about blind men essentially taking it for granted that it's okay to grope. There are many blind women who say that that blind men have an expectation that because they're dealing with a blind woman, that that woman ought to go to bed with them the first date, and if she doesn't, she gets dropped. A whole range of issues, and I guess part of my concern is, I certainly have talked to enough people and have actually witnessed enough things that I certainly think there's some truth in the fact that there are an awful lot of maladjusted blind guys out there whose understanding and comprehension of relationship building is pretty atrocious. My question is, how much do we do in a consumer organization to say to these guys, look, stop this. This is atrocious. This is awful. For the most part, what women tend to do is to simply avoid these folks, and what other men tend to do is to pretend that they don't exist. So, any thoughts?
I think that there probably ought to be peer support for this kind of training to... let blind guys know that certain things aren't respectable to do when going out with ladies again.
We have a situation right now in our bowling league with one individual, and whether or not the woman's married or not, it doesn't matter. We've told him that you're out of here is the bottom line, and a lot of these people are such that they just don't want to be educated. I swear they want to do what they do, and that's that.
You've tried politely and as peers to say this is inappropriate, and they still do it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, apparently they want to live a life of blissful ignorance, I guess.
Am I accurate? Are there some blind guys out there who are particularly slob-like?
Run into a groper at least every time I go to a convention.
Amen.
Because what that does is, you see, that makes us people that are good guys, you know, look bad.
I think that's a good point, Anthony. I guess what Bill is saying, and I guess it's been my experience too, that a lot of those folks are pretty tied to that approach to getting along, and I think it has an awful lot to do about their particular self-esteem issues that are out there, which is one of the reasons why I really think perhaps more for guys really than for girls. We need to get involved earlier to try to set out some parameters on what is appropriate behavior, because I think that guys more than girls seem to have inappropriate behaviors with regard to dating. I'm not saying that there's no such thing as a girl who doesn't, but I think that in our experience, and by our I mean all of us who are here, I would suspect that if we had to choose a sex that was more inappropriate, it would probably be the guys. And so I think there is a real need for involvement of someone, and I'm not sure quite what that involvement ought to be, but I'm absolutely convinced that one of the reasons that people end up in so many problems in terms of relationships is that they've never really been taught how. A survey that was done, or has actually been repeated several times, has indicated that blind people tend to become interested in dating at a considerably older age than operates for their sighted peers. And one of the theories that's put forward to account for this is that so much of the pressure to date and to become involved with the opposite sex is visual.
I would think that would make a lot of sense. I mean, that's why a guy is usually interested in a girl, because he likes the way she looks.
I don't know, because, I mean, my lifestyle of being interested in girls and everything has always been when I was at a very young age, I'd say.
That probably may be true, and I think it goes back to a lot of things. Now, I can't say for me, because I had my first kiss when I was in the second grade, too, behind the bushes. But I think it kind of goes back to what Debbie said early on, one of the factors being, which is true, a lot of parents, you know, especially if you're an only blind child, they're more protective. They don't want you going out because they're afraid you might get hit by a car. Something may happen to you. Then there's that whole issue that we talked about last week, the communication, and how do you know, when you're in that room, to make that eye contact, to know who's even in the room that you might want to go up and get to know. And then it goes back to what we talked about earlier, even with the transportation. You know, at least in the younger days, I don't know how kids nowadays do it, but in my day, the way you went out and met people was you went to a bar, you danced, you know, you seen people in the bar, you went over, you asked them to dance or whatever, and that's how you kind of met them. And so that, you know, that becomes an issue too. And just like Antonio said, as far as going, you know, being able to get out and meet people, you know, if you're in situations, and I suppose, you know, like if you were involved in school activities and that kind of thing, your chances more likely apt to happen. But how often does that happen for blind people?
The lack of eye contact that the blind kids have, they don't have the eye for a beautiful girl and stuff, and maybe that slows their progress as far as dating and things of that nature.
When kids first begin to date, rarely is it because they're struck with love at first sight. It happens once in a while, but it's rare. Most of the time, it's because somebody's cute and it would be neat to be seen with them, and it's all very surface and exploratory, and it's all new, and they're feeling nervous and ill at ease themselves in reaching out into this new world, this new territory. And I think if a guy saw two cute girls, and one was sighted and one was blind, but they were equally cute and equally smart and equally charming, the sighted one would probably win every time, unless that blind one had really gotten a hold of his heart.
Lisa Hall, who I guess her mic may not be working tonight, which is too bad, says that self-confidence and a positive attitude are really key in every part of life. And I think that what Lisa's implying is that also operates for dating. Guys, we are approaching the end. Let's go around once more. Someone who is visually impaired or blind and who's afraid to date, what would you guys say to that person?
If you're interested in someone and she's interested in you, it doesn't matter whether you whether you're blind or sighted or whether she's blind or sighted.
You know, if you have any habits, try not to make them an issue or not to do them while you're meeting her.
It doesn't matter what's on the outside, it's what's on the inside that counts.
I would kind of jokingly say, tell people, just don't look. That's actually how I met my husband. Neither one of us were looking at the time. Interestingly enough, the pressure was off. So I think there's a lot to be said for that, though, that allow yourself, put yourself in situations that are comfortable, where you might meet people. You know, volunteer kind of opportunities are a great place to meet people. You know, certainly for blind people, clubs are difficult with the communication issues. But, you know, put yourself in a comfortable situation where you can meet people and be yourself.
Also, take into consideration that, you know, when you go to conventions and stuff, I mean, those people that are single out there or whatever, you know, they might meet a person as well. You know, NFPA, CB conventions, etc., you know.
What Rachel said has a lot of merit, because some people are so desperate to meet somebody, as soon as they meet somebody that may be a candidate for a nice date or maybe even just a nice friendship, they begin acting desperate and they begin coming on too strong. So I think just put yourself in situations, as Rachel said, that are comfortable for you.
I think one of the interesting phenomena that are out there is I've talked with a number of blind people who have invented personas for themselves on the internet and engage in kind of internet sex chat pretty widely. It very seldom, I guess, leads to actual dates, though it sometimes does. But what they say is that it is extremely freeing for them, because they're not perceived as blind or visually impaired. And several of them have said that what doing that allowed them to do was to recognize that they actually had a lot to contribute. They were very creative. They could be pretty cool internet sex partners. And it really helped them, they said, to develop the confidence to try things that they probably wouldn't have tried had they not had access to the internet. Ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate the turnout tonight. It is significant, perhaps, that tonight we have had the largest turnout that we've ever had in any of our Tuesday topics. I'm not sure whether that means that dating is a really important issue for a large number of individuals or that people feel more comfortable talking about it. Nevertheless, I'd like to thank all of you for your contributions tonight. I'm not sure we've come up with final answers, but I certainly think we've given people who are blind and people who are sighted some opportunities to think about some of the operating parameters of people who are blind and visually impaired getting involved in dating. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in this evening. I'd like to thank Rachel and Larry and Dave Williams and the makers of iVocalize. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, good night. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will take a good hard look at how agencies for the blind deliver their services to people who are blind. Is it better for agencies to be organized as commissions? Is it better to have independent agencies for the blind that operate as a part of a larger government entity in the state? How is it best to deliver services to people who are blind in the rehab system? Join us next week on Tuesday Topics when we explore the topic, how should agencies of and for the blind be governed?